Welcome to the Astrology University podcast, helping you find insight, inspiration, and meaning through the study of astrology. And now, on to the show.
Welcome to the Cosmic Eye, the Astrology University podcast. We will look at the month ahead and the upcoming challenges and opportunities. This is the podcast for the Cancer season. I am Alejo Lopez, your host. And today with me is Carol Taylor, astrologer, tutor, and a writer. Carol has published a fantastic book called Astrology, Using the Wisdom of the Stars in Your Everyday Life, and is one of the founders of a London-based school of astrology called Asteria. Hi, Carol. Nice to have you here.
Hi, Alejo. Thanks very much for inviting me. I'm delighted to be here.
Great. Thank you. Now, before we move into cancer season, I would like to mention, as usual, that if you like the podcast, the best thing you can do to support us is to share it with friends and people interested. And we would also love to hear your feedback, or if you want to share some thoughts or reflections, you can email us at help@astrologyuniversity.com. Great. So when I think of cancer, I think of motherhood, of course. I think of, I have the image of a cave and being inside a cave or being in a place like a protected place. And I also have the image of the egg and the little nestling wanting to go out. And this always reminds me of Hermann Hesse's book, The Nyan, where he says, the bird finds its way out of the egg. The egg is the world. To be born, he must first destroy the world. I think now I'm saying this, I think it's more about the passage between Cancer and Leo, the idea to be born, he must first destroy the world. But I do think about the idea of the cave and the egg and the nestling when I think of Cancer. What do you think about, Carol? What images do you get when you think of Cancer?
Well, I think this is a very evocative image for Cancer, Alejo, and I think it expresses something of the double bind of this sign. So anyone with personal planets in Cancer needs that idea of being held within the protective space, or to hold someone or something within a protective space. And we associate Cancer with babyhood and birth and mothering, you know, archetypally speaking. And it's difficult for Cancer to break out of that safe amniotic space in order to fly. So yes, The transition between Cancer and Leo, or perhaps the opposition between Cancer and its opposite sign of Capricorn. So breaking that shell means losing one's sense of safety and belonging. So yes, of course, one has to first destroy a world. The hermit crab, you know, we have this image of the crab. The hermit crab is fine when it's in its old shell, and it's fine too when it's found the newer and bigger shell that it arrives in. But it's that unprotected place of transit in between, which is really just so terrifying for anyone with personal planets in Cancer.
Yeah, it's true. There's a lot of sensitivity in this. It's the first water sign. I mean, if we start in Aries, it's the first water sign. So there's a huge, and it's a cardinal water. So there's this sense of being very sensitive, being exposed to danger in some ways. So the need for protection.
Yes, absolutely. As the first water sign, I guess it's the first iteration or first symbolic example of water. So all three of the water signs, of course, are represented by animals rather than objects or personifications. And so you get the idea of a very primal creature at work, and perhaps particularly so with Cancer. Although it has other associations too, of course, mythically, and as the constellation. But it reminds me of the painting also, the quote from Hesse there, reminds me of the painting by Frida Kahlo. I don't know if you know it. Kahlo also had the sun in Cancer. And as she painted a painting called The Love Embrace of the Universe, the Earth, in brackets, Mexico, myself, Diogo, and Senor Zolotl. I think Senor Zolotl was the dog, their pet dog. And if you're not familiar with the painting, it's really worth having a look at it because it has this very Cancerian quality to it. And it shows all of the above in the title, in these layers of embrace, with Frida in the center holding a naked Diogo like a baby. And then both of them are held within the protective embrace, the protective arms of the earth, which is envisaged as Mexico. And it's interesting that she seems to define Mexico in that painting as the earth and depicting it kind of as like the cosmos itself. And so Carlo had her son in Cancer in the 11th house. And so for her, perhaps Mexico was the whole universe. And she's like the kind of mother Mexico. So we see that with the field of Cancer, which is protective and binding and protects its own space very, very, very fiercely.
Yeah, nice, beautiful. I was thinking, you know, when you're saying this about Mexico being the whole world for her, I was thinking Hermann Hesse is also Sun in Cancer. And I was looking for some quotes that could kind of represent that. And I found this one from Siddhartha. He explains the whole history of Siddhartha. And at some point he says, your soul is the whole world. So again, this idea, it's interesting, right? How Cancer can have so many different layers, because in some perspective, it could be the idea of belonging. So it becomes like very attached to just one's own family, or it can grow. And the idea of belonging perhaps to a country or a nation, and then it can expand even more and more. And then the idea of belonging to the human race and perhaps the whole cosmos. So it's interesting how Cancer, which is, it reminds me of this idea that you said about the hermit crab, that it has to change houses to a bigger house. So I guess at some level we start, we know if you have a lot of Cancer in your chart, you start with a small sense of, not small sense, with a more restricted perhaps sense of belonging. And perhaps as life grows on, expands, you start to see that you belong to many different places and not to just one, right? So it can expand. And just like the crab goes from one small house to a bigger house. And how to do that process, I guess it's sometimes, it feels a bit of a challenge, a bit of a little crisis because belonging is so important for Cancer. So to question where you belong might feel a bit threatening at some point. But in the end, you get to this point, your soul is the whole world. The earth is you're connected to the whole of the earth, the whole of the cosmos. I mean, possibly it's not the way people should do if it's Cancer, but I find this image interesting. I don't know.
Yes, absolutely, it is. And I think the danger for Cancer is to see the world as being too small, because the rest of it out there is too scary. So as soon as you realize that in order to grow, you have to break through those bonds, and that's perfectly shown in that in that original quote about the bird and the egg from Hesse. Yes, you get this sense of you get the sense with Cancer that the Cancerian mind often places the boundary quite close to them. And so their family is their family. And outside of that, everybody is a stranger. And so to try and embrace that, to encompass that, and to think of, it's very opposite, it's very different to the kind of community that Aquarius creates, which is welcoming all comers. Cancer doesn't do that. Cancer identifies the people that it feels comfortable with. And those are the family, come hell or high water. Even if they hurt you, come hell or high water, you will defend those people, because they're your basic ground. And so to try and move beyond that is that's part of the growing up process, really.
Yeah, nice. And you had some other classic examples. Would you like to name another one?
Yes, well, apart from Carlo, of course, one of the examples that I very often use in teaching and presentations is that of Marcel Proust, the French writer, whose major work, well, he only really wrote one major work, which was the very long novel, A la recherche du temps perdu, In Search of Lost Time. And Proust's chart is quite a singular chart, perhaps all charts are, but he had Aries rising with the moon on the ascendant, conjunct Neptune, and he was born at the Neptune-Uranus square with Uranus in Cancer down there in the fourth house. And he had the sun in Cancer, also Mercury, conjunct Mercury in Cancer and conjunct Jupiter in Cancer, and all of that is on the IC. And it's so, just the name of the book is so evocative of the Cancerian concern with memory and recording events. And he records events in very fine detail. And he goes, it's reading it. It's a very difficult book to read. There are sentences that go on for pages and pages. You never get to the end of it. But you have to just release yourself into the language. And it's once you do that, it's like being in a boat on the ocean and you just allow yourself to be in the experience. So you know you're in the presence of someone with several planets in Cancer because of that lilting, rhythmic, melodic quality to the language.
Yeah, I've only managed to read the first two. I didn't manage to read the others. I got stuck there. But and also, he had this, psychologists, sometimes they talk about La Madeleine de Proust, because he has this effect. I think it was that he was eating a Madeleine, and it's not just that you have a memory, but you get completely transported back to that time in past, and you're not just remembering, you live it over again with your body, which I think could be something of the way cancer registers events and the way memory works for cancer. It's not a saving of facts, it's more like saving feelings, emotions, and perhaps sensations even, but it's more like a very subjective way of recording what happened. And this effect, the La Madeleine de Proust, is like that. Like you go back to a feeling, to a moment, not so much to data or information. So I think it is really cancer. Yeah, it's an excellent example.
Yes, and of course, so there's a thing called Proustian memory in honor of this, which is exactly that we hold in memory something that may, as an event, have been quite unimportant from an objective point of view, but from the subjective point of view, is everything. It has become the whole world and it's held in the memory. Until then, it's re-evoked by the drinking of a cup of tisane or the eating of a Madeleine cake or whatever else evokes that memory. So that was really strong for Proust. And of course, he spent a lot of his life after his parents died. He lived at home and he retreated into his bedroom and wrote from his bedroom at night and slept during the day. He had his bedroom cork lined to reduce the noise and the sound and the, you know, of the outside world. And that's where he did his work. He created a womb in which to do his work.
This idea again of being protected. Nice, fantastic examples. So then we also usually look at things we can do in this season. And the first thing I listed here, kind of in a funny way, call your mom. Of course, I meant it in a kind of a joking, but I do think like, well, cancer is this time of maybe remembering, going to the past. Maybe it's not your mom you're going to call. Maybe it's some other figure that you had that nurtured you, protected you. Because of course, motherhood is not always healthy for everyone. It's not for everyone. It was an easy and healthy experience. But this idea of going back perhaps to that person, that place, that environment that nurtured you, that took care of you, that made you feel safe. And it doesn't mean going back literally, calling this person literally, but like within yourself, this idea of the subjective world, right? So within yourself, going back to that place, maybe to thank them, maybe to say something. But it's kind of, I think it's a good time to, well, to search for the lost time, like the book, right? To go back to the past and revisit our memories and see what they mean for each one of us. And maybe from that, to come back to the present and see, well, what is it that I need now to feel nurtured? Why do I need these things if it's coming up from a hurt, a wound, let's say, or if it's coming up from more of a something that was healed? And to focus on what do I need to feel nurturing? And I like the idea of the Vedic, the Ayurvedic medicine. You know, they say that food is not only what you eat, it's everything that comes through the senses. So it's like what you watch, what you listen to, what you read, the way your house looks, what the smells you receive, like everything that comes from the senses. So this idea of perhaps focusing on how we are being nurtured, our soul, let's say, if we're talking about cancer, is being nurtured in so many different ways. And it's not just the food what nurtures us. And to kind of assess what we feel we need to grow. Yes.
Yes, absolutely. And you're right that not everybody has a good memory of parenting, mothering from the past. And ultimately, I think perhaps this is so for anybody with planets in Cancer, and indeed, if you haven't, where Cancer is in your chart, where it is on the cusp. And we can think about this during this upcoming month when the Sun goes through Cancer very particularly. Just that idea that we all have to parent ourselves on some level. And Cancer can move out into the world and be strong and connect to that wider cosmos, that wider universe, step beyond its self-imposed boundaries. If it feels that the ground is safe in order to be able to go out, if you feel confident in that sense of how you can self-nurture. And sometimes that can just come down to very small things. I do like that Ayurvedic idea that we can connect to a particular substance, to food. You know, food has this symbolic quality. The first thing that you do when somebody visits your house is you offer them hospitality. You offer them in the form of some food and drink. So it's the basic form of nourishment, and that's a basic place for self-care. What is it in the form of food that you actually need? And although that's a very tiny example, seems superficial, actually I think it's totally fundamental. I speak as somebody with the moon in Cancer, of course, so I'm very much attuned to that. But I think also the key ground of Cancer is its feeling and mood and tidal rhythms. And that's, you know, it, recognizing those inside of ourselves and our own interior world and in the outer world of nature too. So I think any activities which open this up also worthy of attention through this season. And I think to do that, we have to suspend our modern human need for things that kind of add up neatly and make sense in logical terms. We obviously need to keep our outer life running according to clock time. But lunar time is quite different. And it's a time that is felt by the psyche rather than measured by the regular hands of the clock. So I'd say that that's an appropriate thing to start thinking about during this upcoming month, if you can, is just to let yourself drift a little from your usual routine or your daily plan or schedule. The lunar calendar drifts against the solar one. So if you follow the lunar calendar, it unhooks you a little bit from solar time. That can be a little dislocating. So it's perhaps something that you want to keep as a sort of conscious activity. But it allows us to, if you try to reckon your days by the lunar cycle, just through this month, it just puts you in touch with that more feeling-led ground of Cancer. And then I think a whole sort of inner world opens up. And if you're an artist or a musician or a poet, or you've got some sort of artistic way of expressing yourself, these languages that can adequately carry and express how we feel, that's something that's rather beautiful to engage in. And you don't have to be good at it. It's just your own sort of personal, finding your own personal language.
Yeah, beautiful. And I agree. You know, it's interesting how Cancer, I was thinking while you were speaking, how Cancer is so much related to this inner world, the inner rhythm of the soul, like you were saying, the lunar calendar. But at the same time, it's a cardinal sign. And I thought, like when you were sharing this, the possibility of connecting to the inner world so that creativity will open up. The idea of by going within, you can, something will emerge. And this idea of cardinality. Do you have any other ideas of how cardinality is expressed with the Cancer?
It's kind of a curious one for Cancer, because we think of Cancer, and it is an introverted sign. Cancer is much more at home in quiet spaces and away from the bustle of the world. But you see the cardinality, I think, if that person is placed in a position of danger, or if they feel hurt, or if they have an emotional reaction to something, you see that reaction happens very, very quickly. It's almost instantaneous. And there's this very active way of asserting emotional ground. And that might not always be verbally expressed. Cancer is in traditional astrology, it's known as a mute sign. It's not a verbal sign, but it's felt very keenly. Anyone with planets in Cancer will know that you have that sort of kick in the gut when you react to something. And I think that's part of the cardinal quality.
Nice. Thank you. Yeah, fantastic idea. Thank you. Okay. So now let's move on to the key signatures of the month of this period with the transits and everything. And okay, according to my information, the 21st of June at 2:58 p.m., and this is GMT, the sun will go into Cancer, so the season properly starts. And there was an idea, you were sharing with me before we started, an idea of this set of transits that are going to happen in relation to Uranus. So before we go into the date specifically, would you like to, you kind of saw this pattern, which I think it was beautiful. Would you like to share some ideas on that? And then maybe we can pin down the dates and everything. But you saw this pattern, which I think it was fantastic, with Venus, Mars.
Yes, just before we come to the pattern, I thought it was worth Cancer style just taking a breath and thinking about this as the solstice point.
Yes.
I think that's so important. It's one of the four solar stations of the year. And it's the point, like, with, we think, very much of the winter solstice, where the sun in the northern hemisphere, the sun hangs for 3 days, appears to hang for 3 days at the same point, reaches this lowest point at noon. And so we have this idea of the 3 days in the underworld before resurrection. At the summer solstice, we have the sun appearing to stand still at its highest point in the sky for about 3 days. So it has this quality of a turning point as the sun weaves up from the equator up to at the equinox to the Tropic of Cancer in the north, and then back down to the equator and back down to the Tropic of Capricorn in 23.5 degrees south. So that's the limits of its bounds. Yes, that's its bounds. And so in that movement, we have this Cancerian idea of the tide coming in and the tide going out, and this sort of rhythmic breathing in and breathing out. And it's just that point of the balancing of dark and light at this moment of the year, which I think is interesting to connect to. It's the point of maximum solar power in the northern hemisphere. And from here, of course, we have the decline into the darkness of winter. So there's a reminder here, I think, that dark and light are mutually necessary and complementary. The darkness is contained in the light, and vice versa. And we see that in the yin yang symbol, and of course all over Jung's work, the incorporation of the shadow, and so on. And I think it's important, it's a time for thinking about this. It's important for any individual or group or organization to acknowledge that shadow side, that opposite side. And you can use the solstice as a kind of ritual space to reflect on that idea. You know, the devil's not someone over there and nothing to do with us. We have to incorporate that in. And sadness and grief and the flip sides of, you know, the solar light and solar joy, those are also part of things too. So it's just a reminder of that time.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I was in London. We met a days ago. And I went to see Midsummer Night Dream by Shakespeare. And you pointed out, like, you're seeing in this, because for people who haven't read it, it happens on the solstice, actually. Mm-hmm. So, and Carol pointed out, you're going to see this exactly at this season. And it's interesting because in the play, people fall in love and out of love, because, of course, the fairies are playing around so quickly. And how one feels, and this idea of the light and shadow you were mentioning, and I was thinking also about the idea of Cancer and the emotions in motion, how we are in the Cancer season, we can be more attuned perhaps of this idea that emotions have their own flow. And in the play, people fall in love and out of love so quickly and so abruptly, and how a person who, you know, when you're in love with someone, they are the most important thing, but then suddenly, because a fairy played out, and then you're not in love with them anymore, you see them as disgusting, you finally see everything that's disgusting about them. And this idea of, remember, the light and shadow are necessary, that to love probably also means to suffer. It's not going to come only with the nice things. I think it's a beautiful reminder, yeah, for sun in Cancer. Yeah, because it's the world of emotions, right? So the sun is lighting up the world of emotions, and it means there's a pool of different experiences there. And we call them light and dark, but probably it's our judgment based on how we feel about them, right? But it's mm-hmm. it's a there are so many things to feel. I remember the poet Sappho from Greece. She said, one has to feel everything in life. This idea that we need to go through all of these feelings in life. Nice. Yeah, thank you for stopping by there. Yes, very good, Carol. Thank you so much.
But yes, moving on to the Mars square to Uranus, but there's also this series of squares to Uranus. The Mars square Uranus is on the 26th of June, then Venus is square to Uranus on the 2nd of July, and Mercury, which is moving quite rapidly at the moment because it's close to its superior conjunction with the Sun, comes up to square Uranus on the 23rd of July, right at the end of this month period. So we've got this series of squares. And just that Mars square to Uranus, that does feel quite tense, quite resistant, quite belligerent, unwilling to compromise. So that's how we start our season here. It's quite an interesting point. And if we're putting it into the context of that, seeing both sides, the dark and the light, and the idea of looking at our very deepest feelings and acknowledging them and allowing them to be expressed. We feel what we feel, and there's not necessarily any logic to that, but we feel what we feel. And so I think those point, particularly maybe Mars square Uranus, is just a point of a couple of days, two, three, 4 days, where we can just acknowledge feelings of anger or resistance or belligerence or pushing back against something that we think has disadvantaged us or isn't going our way, and just be aware of that, and find a way to express it. You know, light a firework, but in a safe place. You know, and what's interesting about these squares? So there's a sequence. I think there's Mars, then there's Venus. So there's a reconciliation process, and then the Mercury comes along, and it allows a moment of dialogue. And at the same time, we have Lilith, and I don't know if you work with Lilith, if your listeners are working with Lilith here, but I do often work with Lilith. And Lilith is between 18 and 20 degrees of Leo during the course of the month. So she is squaring Uranus during this period of time, coming up to a square to Uranus. So that's the bigger backdrop of it. And of course, then Mars and Venus and Mercury also make conjunctions to Lilith. So that's part of the story too. And for those of you who don't work with Lilith, there's the archetypal image there of the outlaw who's been ejected by the authorities. So those are particular flashpoints perhaps in that story.
Very interesting.
Oh, well, I was just going to say that on my mind at the moment, on lots of people's minds, I expect in the USA and in the UK, the current stories around Donald Trump and Boris Johnson. And of course, Donald Trump is facing the court case for, as I understand it, leaving rather a lot of hypersensitive documents in a bathroom. And over here in the UK, of course, we've got Boris Johnson, former prime minister. He resigned recently, just a few days ago, as an MP, because he knew that he was going to be ousted he was going to be suspended as an MP because of the findings of an inquiry into his behaviour during lockdown. It found that he lied consistently to Parliament. And so, you know, we have in these both of these characters very much this pushback. And the sense of resistance and the rejection of any kind of authority. It's very interesting to be seeing this at the moment. Both of them are playing the role of disruptor and agitator, and they've become emblems of disaffection. And it's very easy for us to hook our own disaffection onto that and say, yes, I'm waving the flag for Boris Johnson, or I'm waving the flag for Donald Trump. But maybe we can take a step back at this point and just examine where that comes from in ourselves.
Yeah, very, very interesting. So to the To make sure I understand, so the Lilith square Uranus, we can identify with this idea of being, you didn't say an outcast, you used a different word.
Well, she's a renegade presence. I'm not sure which word it was that I used. Outlaw, I think, was the word.
Outlaw, yes.
Outside of the normal scope and bounds. Mm-hmm. And that's her place of power, but it's also her place of disempowerment. And with Lilith, we're always on the knife edge between those two things. Anyone with Lilith strong in the chart tends to operate outside of the boundaries. And yet that's also a place of woundedness. And as long as we are aware of that, then we can turn that so that it becomes a place of strength. We recognize that sense of being the outlaw, and we can use that. She wouldn't lie under, she was said to have been the first wife of Adam, but she wouldn't lie under Adam and be a good girl and do her, you know, do what she was expected to do. So she wanted to lie on top. And so, of course, she was ejected from the Garden of Eden and often flew to the Red Sea in a state of exile and had a relationship with Satan. You know, the rest is history. But that's the narrative that we're under at the moment. And Uranus, of course, is the sky god. And, you know, he just pushes out seed into the world indiscriminately. And there's no sense of anything landing in real space and growing and taking root. So we have that sort of energy in the air through the course of this month.
So when Mars picks this up, is this idea that anger comes out, sudden spurts of anger because of feeling an outlaw, right?
Yes, that's very possible. Where it's unconscious, you know, light blue touch paper and stand well back is the instruction that's on the back of firework packets. And I think that's a good instruction for this. But the more conscious we are of that, the more that we can use it. You know, the ancient world had all sorts of festivals for turning the social order upside down. This time of year isn't particularly one of them, but we can do something of that nature and recognize that we need to do something wild under this energy, you know, go and play your djembe drum, go and dance wildly, take up tango or flamenco, or, you know, do something that is really that sort of using that wild energy, that wild, quite feminine. Well, the Lilith archetype has that archetypal feminine quality to it.
Nice. And then Venus comes. So you were saying there's a sense of perhaps the anger bursting up, and but then when Venus comes, the sense of more acceptance, perhaps, or more finding joy in that, like the idea of finding pleasure in that, perhaps being able to love that aspect of ourselves that has to do with being outsiders, right?
I like the idea of the Venus following the Mars, because it's only once the true feelings have been expressed honestly and openly that you can start any kind of reconciliation or balancing process.
Fantastic. And then Mercury comes, who is the perfect example of the idea of balancing opposites and trying to reconcile them and creating an alchemy between what we have experienced during the two transits. Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah, it's a great, great. Thank you so much for sharing this, Carol. And then on the 30th of June, well, on the 27th, you said Mercury is moving quickly, so it's going into Cancer. So we kind of, with this process, we kind of moved forward in the month. Let's go back to the beginning. On the 30th of June, Neptune stations retrograde, right? And he's going to stay retrograde until December, so for 6 months, which is normal every time he's kind of on the other side of where the sun is. And, well, you know, it's interesting because we're getting to the last period of Neptune being in Pisces. Finally, it's going to go away soon. How do you interpret this idea of Neptune going retrograde?
Well, it's a collective planet, of course, and it's so it's transpersonal in nature, and it's retrograde for about half the year. So I think it's more difficult for us to see the influence of that as individuals, unless, of course, you've got something around 27 degrees in your chart, particularly of the mutable signs, in which case the station will really have a very personal implication.
Yeah.
But Neptune calls into question what we consider to be real and solid and dependable and unassailable. And those things which we've come to rely on for our bedrock can feel as though they're being eroded and nothing feels safe. But it also brings what Shakespeare called a sea change. We have to try and look beyond the immediacy of our fear or grief to try and see the bigger arc of what's happening. And that's almost impossible to do, really. But for anybody with planets picked up by Neptune right now, and maybe just for all of us, you know, just the idea of being in the flow of it, just allowing ourselves to sense things and to be in that more interior space. Neptune chimes with the idea of the Cancer season and the meaning of Cancer, because they are both portals to the imagination. And so they bring us a new vision of the world, which is centered in symbols and dreams and stories and emotional responses. And so through those tides, we just learn to let go a little of our concrete and literal sense perceptions. We learn to trust our intuition and imagination a little more, I think.
Yeah, I find it, whenever Neptune goes retrograde, like you were saying, it's a collective motion, unless, of course, you have something there exactly. But I always try to think about the ways in which we have accepted to be delusioned, how, like, all of the expectations and illusions that we have placed out there. And I feel like the moment when Neptune goes retrograde, because he does this all the time, not all the time, but every year and for several months. So this moment is like a period in which I think we can go back in and see, why did we project these illusions? Why did we come up with these ideas? Perhaps kind of getting it back inside, instead of putting it out there, getting back in, looking back into ourselves and see, why did we needed to create these expectations? What were we hoping to achieve that didn't happen? Or perhaps some things did happen, but in some things we felt deceived. And so it's like a whole process of our own triggers that made us. We were talking about love just a minute ago when we were talking about Midsummer's Night Dream. And I think it's so clear, when you love someone, we make so many projections. So when Neptune goes retrograde, I would say it's the time when these projections come back to you and you feel disappointed that the person is not the way you expected it to be. But I would say this applies to everything in life, right? Not just to falling in love. So the Neptune retrograde period, I think, may help us to see what had we been hoping for that didn't happen, and how much of this that didn't happen because it was impossible, because it was our projection. So we need to feel responsible, perhaps. We need to be responsible, perhaps, for that sense of disappointment or deception. And how much that didn't happen, well, because of something out there, right? And we can see what we could work, how we could work that out. But kind of, yeah, I think there's this process of inner examination of our expectations.
Yes, certainly. And I think we can do that with any retrograde period, with any planet in its own terms, certainly.
Yes. And then on the same day, so the moon, so this is a quick transit, but I think it's interesting because the moon will be in Scorpio and it will be squaring. It's going to be in Scorpio, exactly. So it's going to be creating a T-square with Mars in Leo and Uranus in Taurus. So this whole sense of rage that we were talking about before, I don't know, it might get triggered during this day. So around the 30th of June, like you were saying, be careful with the fireworks. I would say this is a particular day to be careful about, because the moon is in Scorpio, which is not so easygoing. It's going to be picking this up. So I think this might be an interesting date, especially, I would say, if these planets are picking up something in your chart, because, of course, not for everyone, not everybody's going to be enraged. But I would say it's an interesting day to be careful, to pay attention about your feelings of anger or defending yourself and these kind of things?
Certainly, we associate Scorpio perhaps with the process of catharsis. And it's a there was a phrase that I heard about Scorpio, and I can't remember where I heard it from, but violence for the sake of healing. And that seems very, as on an archetypal level, violence for the sake of healing, that seems very redolent of the Scorpio energy. So again, you know, it's all about consciousness. Do we use being conscious of it? Do we use it wisely?
Yeah, exactly. Because of course, I would say, if the sky is creating this figure, it is a moment. I would say, you know, the sky is our guide. It is a moment to connect with that. The thing is, if we connect with that in an unconscious way, what might happen? But if we are aware of it and we connect with it in a very conscious way, we can create something probably. Yeah.
Before we move on, would it be possible to have a quick look at Mercury conjuncting the Sun?
Yes. We have it on the 1st of July, right?
We do, yes.
And you were saying Mercury is moving quickly because it's going to the superior conjunction.
That's right. It's Mercury is coming up to its superior conjunction there. So it's exact on the 1st of July. And that's the beginning of Mercury's cycle, goes from superior conjunction to superior conjunction, with the inferior conjunction being the point of retrograde. And that's sort of halfway through the cycle. So I think it's very interesting that we have just at this turning point of the solstice, just after that, you know, Hermes is currently in the underworld. At the beginning of this period, and it emerges on the other side of the sun when the sun moves into Leo in the third week of July. So we've got this period of time when we have this sort of psychopomp energy as Mercury moves through the shadows of the sun, is lost in the rays of the sun. That's going to be particularly resonant perhaps for anybody who's got planets around 9 degrees of Cancer. But just generally, there's a sense of a new beginning in Mercury's terms. And of course, that's going to play on all the Cancerian themes of home and family, people we're in a caretaking relationship with, and of course, our own personal cycles of self-care. But yes, Mercury is moving very swiftly at the moment, which it always does at superior conjunction.
Yes. So you would say this day might be particularly prominent, special for examining this idea of the psychopomp, so this idea of what areas of ourselves we can go and find, which are kind of hidden in the underworld, and perhaps bring them into awareness.
Yes, we all need to have that psychopomp, that guide of souls aspect of ourselves and activity that we engage in, which allows us to go into that deeper space. Meditation takes us there, perhaps. Therapy takes us there. Talking to somebody takes us there, having a guide or a witness, or a way of recording our thoughts. So that's a good time to be thoughtful, I think, and aware, self-aware, spend time in a quieter kind of interior space, maybe. And just acknowledge the sense that there is something at this very much deeper level that maybe one is trying to access, or the world is trying to access, and that's available at that particular moment in time.
Yeah, fantastic. Because sometimes we look at Mercury because he's moving so fast, and we don't give it enough attention. And what you're saying is like, okay, yeah, this is a psychopomp. It's like it can give us a lot of insights and a lot of self-awareness if we give him room to do that.
Yes, and you see it in the charts of people who have Mercury conjunct the Sun, not retrograde, and you know then it's the superior conjunction. And you can see that sort of almost shamanistic voices from the deep space, interior space aspect. To that person, I'm thinking of Jimi Hendrix, for instance, with the Sun-Mercury conjunction in Sagittarius in the 12th, and that's that sense of speaking from that archetypal space. So I think it's a moment for that.
Nice, fantastic. Great, thank you. And then we get to the 3rd of July, so we get to the full moon. The Sun is at 11 degrees of Cancer, the Moon is at 11 degrees of Capricorn. It's a bit strange, you know, that we have the full moon first and then we have the new moon. I think it's always interesting when that happens. And so if you have, of course, any planets in 11 degrees of cardinal signs, I would say mostly any planets in 11 degrees of Cancer or Capricorn, this lunation might be very important. If you have any transits there, this lunate, like long transits, probably this lunation will be very important. And I always feel like the full moon in Cancer is helping us reflect. You were talking before about Cancer and Capricorn, like when the egg breaks and the nestling comes out. So I think it always helps us reflect on our sense of needing to belong, needing to be part of something, needing to be nurtured and taken care of, and at the same time growing into being independent, being self-reliant, being autonomous, right? So I think this is the tension. And I would say that to me, the way I take it, the Cancer Capricorn polarity, is the idea that nurturing is not only emotional nurturing, which would be Cancer, but it's also like material nurturing, like to nurture, you know, we need the two figures. We need the figure that is warm and caring and sweet, but also we need the figure that is kind of a bit more hard and pushes us to grow, you know, and it's not just soft. The idea that, you know, when a baby, I was in my goddaughter's birthday, and we were choosing sandals, and we needed to be careful because the sandals need to be hard now because she's about to start to learn how to walk. Mm-hmm. So if they are too soft, she will never grow and learn how to walk. And I think this is the paradox between Cancer and Capricorn, that to nurture and grow, we need both. We need the softness and also the hard part. So I think this lunation in general, the full moon in this season, in the Cancer season, reminds us of this idea that it's important to find these placements of safety and security, but then it's important not to draw inwards too much, perhaps, but to grow from there. Does it make sense what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And I think with all oppositions, there needs to be a sense of actively trying to integrate the two things, so that in this case, for instance, that sense of mature self-regulation and self-management actually becomes the hardness that you're talking about there, the hard sandals, actually become the thing that nurture and support. Mm. So that seems like a paradox at the beginning of the process, but in fact, it becomes the truth of the matter. You can't stay in that very soft space because, as you say, you lose your spine, you lose your sense of uprightness, or those sense of there being scaffolding, and you lose your sense, ultimately you lose your sense of safety. So the one is dependent on the other, and that's the paradox. All sign oppositions contain a paradox, but they also contain the idea of a bringing together into the same space.
And this full moon is going to be trining or sextiling, depending if you're talking from the sun or the moon, Jupiter in Taurus. So I have this sense of perhaps trusting the universe, you know, trusting Mother Nature, trusting your body to see that you know what you need to go through this paradox, I would say. Mm-hmm. But then it's also picking up the Mars in Leo. So I was thinking about this idea that you were saying about speaking out, being able to speak out your desires or emotions, like finding a safe environment, a safe context in which you can express actually what you want, what you need, and you can act from a very honest, a very honest, transparent, perhaps, and perhaps noble with the idea of Leo way, right?
Absolutely, yes. This full moon is actually conjunct Prince Harry's ascendant, and I don't know whether it's ascendant descendant, I should say, and I don't know whether you've been following the story of this. It's very much here in the UK at the moment, which is that he has he's currently embroiled in a case in the High Court against two newspaper groups in the UK on charges of phone hacking and relentless press intrusion. And he just testified a few days ago. It will take, the case takes another, will take another few months to complete. But I wonder whether for him, for instance, there'll be something around that point of 3rd of July, or maybe the 1 or 2 days beforehand, as the energy starts to build towards that full moon point, where he's just, you know, it's a sense of culmination or release, or a sense of seeing how the two sides can work together. And of course, all of this is very personal for him, because it's rooted in the loss of his mother in very similar sort of circumstances, press intrusion circumstances, back in the 1990s. What's interesting also is that if you set the full moon chart for London, the angles are the UK's 1801 chart, and the full moon is across the ICMC. So it's very, you know, there are sort of national perspectives to this also, and that may be true for some other countries around the world. But yes, it's a point of illumination, perhaps a point of clarity, and a point of potential for integration and self-awareness, integration through self-awareness.
Nice, thank you. Now, we're talking, we have so many interesting ideas, and I'm looking at the time now. So I would like to, if it's okay with you, on the 6th of July, we have again the moon picking up this Mars Uranus. Then on the 10th of July, Mars goes into Virgo. And I would like to talk a little bit about the new moon and the nodes that are changing to Aries and Libra, because we're a bit tight on time now. Is that okay with you?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, because I think this is important. These are important things that are happening. So the new moon, we have it on the 17th of July. Yes, and it's happening at 24 degrees of Cancer, 24:56, so almost 25 degrees of Cancer. So again, if you have anything there at 25 Cancer or maybe 25 Capricorn, this is probably going to be an important lunation. And it's opposing Pluto. It's quite interesting because a few days before, Mercury was also opposing Pluto. And because it's moving so fast, by the time the new moon happens, Mercury is a bit farther away. But Pluto's at 29 degrees of Capricorn. He was in Aquarius and went back into Capricorn. So now the new moon is opposing Pluto. And because the nodes are about to change, Pluto is squaring these nodes. So the nodes, depending on which kind of nodes you use, but I still have them in Taurus Scorpio, but 0-0. Like when the new moon happens, I have them at 0-0 towards Scorpio, like they are literally about to change. And we have a new moon, like, which is indicating something new that's about to start. So, I don't know, do you have any ideas about this? Or
Yes, well, the new moon it's the point of darkness, isn't it? You know that something, there's a seed being set, but it's being born in the dark. And there's a blindness to it. You can sense it, but you don't know it. You can't see it physically. You can't see the moon at this point in its cycle. And the opposition to Pluto just sort of reinforces that. And of course, the nodes are a sun-moon relationship. They say something, and all the myths around the nodes are about dragons swallowing the sun and the moon as they circuit around. And so I think there's a big story there, maybe about, I was thinking of this in terms of the Joseph Campbell's hero stories, and, you know, the hero in the underworld, the sort of journey into the underworld. But we can also see it in terms of any underworld sort of story or journey, the idea of being swallowed and regurgitated. And so there's something there that's quite powerful, I think, about allowing oneself into the depths and allowing oneself to be changed in some kind of alchemical process. I think it's quite a tricky point. Anything square the nodes has this tricky quality to it, because something is trying to be pulled into awareness, but there's a sense of an inevitability around it, a sort of fatefulness around it, as those circumstances are not in our control. And that's also the case with Pluto, I think. We don't feel that the circumstances are under our control. So that might be a kind of liminal point where we just have to trust our own instincts. And it feels as though there's chaos everywhere, but actually we just have to trust our instincts that it's all going to be fine and that the seed is being set and something will grow from that eventually.
Yeah, you're mentioning Joseph Campbell, and I'm thinking on the 17 steps and the hero's journey. One of the steps is the belly of the whale. I'm saying this for people who have the book, maybe they want to go back to it. So the belly of the whale is the moment in which the hero is in some kind of dark cave, perhaps, like a dark concave space, which is a lot, again, it's like a very Cancerian image, right? And he has to stay there and face, we call it sometimes the dark night of the soul. And like you're saying, it's a dark place. And he knows that he's going to be transformed. He knows that in some ways he will have to die and be reborn. And I think it's so poetic that it's happening just when the nodes are turning, because the north node is going to go into Aries. And you were talking about this idea of the dragon eating the hero, or the dragon facing the hero, and the idea of being reborn after this battle. And with the north node moving from Taurus to Aries, I think there is perhaps this sense of, after being in the Scorpio Aries axis, but the north node, Scorpio Taurus axis, but the north node in Taurus, which is more slow in motion and resistant perhaps to motion, the idea that in this dark night, what we are being nurtured to be prepared for the north node going into Aries. So like we're going to start a period perhaps in which we will have the opportunity to go out there, to express ourselves, to fight our battles, speak our truths, and be more active. So this idea of a seed being planted that's going to propel us out into the world. I love this idea. I think it's nice. Yeah.
Yes. And that move from Pisces to Aries, it's like you take something, must take something of the sign that you're moving from into the sign that it's moving into. So in all of the hero stories, I'm just thinking of Jason and the Golden Fleece and that wonderful ceramic where it showed the picture that shows him being swallowed by the cult. And dragon and regurgitated, Athena is standing on. And of course, Jason has this difficult relationship to the feminine through the person of Medea and so on. And there's just that idea of needing to, the hero must release themselves to the feminine, to the ground of something that is not considered to be heroic. That is more emotional in nature and archetypal and primal in nature, and incorporate that in order to be able to go forward and claim the birthright. Don't get to take the golden fleece until you've been through that regurgitation process, that swallowing process, which is your own psychological transformation.
Fantastic. Nice. Thank you so much. And then, on the 23rd, the sun goes into Leo, so we start a new season. And that day, that very same day, Venus stations retrograde. And she will stay there until September the 3rd. I guess we will talk a lot about this on the next episode, but I don't know if you want to share some ideas about this or...
So she's slowing as we go through the rest of June and into July. So that's something to be aware of. And then, goes retrograde on the 23rd and onto inferior conjunction on the 13th of August. And then the retrograde period lasts until the 4th of September. So that's our biblical 40 days in the wilderness. And that's the time for introspection and reevaluation of our values and our desires. And I'm sure that will come up in future podcasts. So Venus just about to enter into the underworld. She's just standing on the precipice of that. We recall the myths of Persephone, also Inanna, the encounter with her dark sister Ereshkigal, being killed, put on the meat hook, etc., etc. And that process of testing, which the goddess undergoes in the descent. So we have still this sort of underworld aspect to it. So all the things that Venus represents, I think, during that time will be entering into a phase of scrutiny It's time to take those things back to their most basic root principles. And there's an process of empowerment also available there if we stay with the process until it's complete.
Yeah, nice. Great, fantastic. Thank you so much, Carol. Then we usually list a few dates that we think might be nice dates to start things or to do, like we call it, opportunity, when opportunity knocks. I've noticed that from the 24th of June to the 6th of July, this might change depending on the kind of orbs people use. The sun will be in Cancer, trining Saturn in Pisces, and they will all be sextiling Jupiter in Taurus. So I think this might be a nice time to, if you want to start a project, to build something, to create something, there's this kind of nice flow between Jupiter and Saturn. Jupiter who brings opportunities and Saturn who brings stability. And if it's something that's coming out from your heart, like from the sun, so the idea of expressing or sharing, I would say this is a nice moment to do that. Then I've noticed that from 29th of June to the 1st of July, on 29th of June, we have the sun trining Saturn, and then they're also trining the moon. They're all in water signs. So I think, again, it might be a good day to focus on creativity, art, if you do something artistic. If you do something therapeutic, maybe it could be a good day to try something that you may want to do to help your patients go deeper or something like that. But it's a day that it feels like we may be able to connect very much with our emotions, right? Then on the 30th of June, yes, Mercury trines Saturn. And on the 1st of July, it's going to sextile Jupiter. So again, I think there is this sense of, this could be something more for like mental work. If you have to read something, if you have to do transactions, I think it could be a positive date.
They all sound like very positive days, don't they? And this interchange of Taurus with the water signs, it feels very fertile, very fecund, very, you're talking about creativity. And I think those are all brilliant days for that. Saturn in Pisces may be a little more tricky. You know, there is that sense of maybe not finding firm ground or needing to sort of work on the manifestation side of it, but certainly fertile from a creative and imaginative point of view, and great for planting something and sort of, you know, infertile soil.
Nice. Thank you. Do you have any other days you wanted to share?
Well, just apropos of the 1st of July with this Mercury sextile Jupiter and the Sun sextile Jupiter, we've got the Mercury-Sun conjunction sextile Jupiter. And I was just, I randomly look at things on the internet. I was thinking, you know, every day is, there's an international day of everything throughout the year. And the 1st of July is Alice's Day, which is an annual celebration of the book by Lewis Carroll, Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. I was looking at his chart. Carroll had Chiron at 11 of Taurus in a grand trine with Mercury and Saturn. He was this, you know, probably knows, this sort of shy, techie mathematician who had an alter ego as a writer of poetry and children's stories. So I think maybe that's a good day, 1st of July, for, you know, a Mad Hatter's tea party and getting into that sort of mindset of imagination and so on.
Nice. Great. Thank you so much. Then the key takeaway on mantra. So we usually give a mantra or a phrase perhaps to reflect on. And mine, talking about this idea of belonging, I chose my family is humanity, my belonging is the earth. The pain is behind. I feel the healing in my heart. I was thinking about this idea of the end of the Taurus Scorpio nodal journey. That's why I chose this idea of the pain is behind. I feel the healing in my heart. Do you have you can come up with one now if you don't have one?
Well, I have a couple of quotes that I guess that's not a personal mantra that I've invented for myself, but a couple of quotes which I think maybe reflect something of the deeper principles of cancer. And one is from the anthropologist Margaret Mead, who did a lot of research into Samoan social customs. She wrote a book called Coming of Age in Samoa in the 1920s. And she said, never believe that a few caring people can't change the world, for indeed, that's all who ever have. There's just that feeling of, you know, you don't have to do anything big or terribly important. You just have to do it. And, you know, the goodness flows from that. And also just coming back to Proust, there's quite a famous quote of his. It's from the book. I won't read out the longer quote because I guess we don't have time, but listeners can go and see it in situ and see the longer quote. But he said, the real voyage of discovery consists not in seeking new landscapes, but in having new eyes. You know, it's basically in the context of saying, you know, you could go to outer space, you could go to Mars, to Venus, but if you take the same pair of eyes with you, you don't see anything different. What you need to do is see with the eyes of imagination, open your sense of vision. And I was thinking about Cancer and the moon, its rule of the moon being so associated in ancient astrology and in traditional astrology with the organ of the imagination as the portal, the gateway for souls to Cancer as the gateway, and Platonic thinking, the gateway for souls to enter into the world, and the moon sphere as the portal of the imagination, where our imagination then takes us beyond that into the realm of divine. And I think that's very much there with Proust, that idea of the organ of the imagination being so primary. And so that's part of my mantra, really, for this.
Nice. Yeah, it made me think so also of the idea of memory, how we build memory. It's not a copy of reality. Mm. We go back to the past, and depending on who we are in the present, we see it with new eyes.
And it has its own reality, and we have to accord it its own reality.
Yeah. Great. Then we also usually share if we're reading something, because usually astrologers, they like to read. So I'm reading right now. So it might not be related to Cancer season. I'm reading Life Isn't Binary by Meg John Barker and Alex Iantafi. And it's actually, when I thought about this, I thought it doesn't have to do with Cancer season. But now I'm thinking it does in a way. Because gender does create groups of belonging, and they question the idea of gender and binary genders. So in some ways, I think it makes sense to share this now in Cancer season. And I've just started to read I, Robot by Isaac Asimov, which is a classic that I always wanted to read. I was in the Technological Museum in London, and they had it there, so I bought it. Yes.
Oh, wonderful.
Well, are you reading anything right now?
Well, yes, always. Actually, I am reading something pretty Cancerian at the moment, which is Eva Luna by Isabel Allende. Mm. It wasn't planned for Cancer season. It just sort of happened that way. And I'm only a short way through so far, but the central character is this little girl called Eva Luna, which I guess roughly translates as Moon Mother. Mm-hmm. And we see her strange, magical birth circumstances, her powerful relationship to her mother, which is rooted in the richness of their imagination, their shared love of stories. When her mother dies, when Eva is seven and she's sent away, it's such a Saturnian number, and redolent of that Cancer Capricorn full moon that we were talking about before, and she's sent away to work for a stranger. But her mother remains alive to her through all of that, because her mother has told her that as long as Eva can imagine her and talk to her and tell her stories, then she'll be alive. So it's really evocative of the power of the mother-child bond and how this survives death. And that's very much on my mind at the moment, because my own mother is 97. So she's coming, sort of coming towards the end of her life, I guess.
Wow, amazing. Nice, Carol, thank you so much. So how can people reach you if they want to reach you? What projects do you have going on?
Well, you mentioned the school that I just set up with Kim Farley, which is called Asteria or Asteria Teaching. So people can contact me through that. Asteria-teaching.com is our web address. I have a website that's just about to be launched, which will be launched around the 1st of July, so in this season. And that will be caroltaylorastrology.com. And you can use that URL, carol at caroltaylorastrology.com if you want to contact me. With Kim, so with Asteria, Kim and I will be doing some workshops through July and August in London. So that's what we're busy preparing for at the moment. Those are my live events for this particular time period. And of course, I'm doing a webinar for Astrology University on the 5th of August. That's slightly outside it, but that's my next thing coming up.
Great, fantastic. If you want to know what Astrology University has in hand, so on 26th of June, from the 26th of June to the 21st of July, there's a course with Kelly Surtees, which is about career and life direction in astrology. So I think it's very useful because sometimes we get clients that they are at this age that they don't know what to study. And sometimes we get clients that they have a study, they have a career, but they want to change careers and they don't know where to go to. So it's important to know exactly where to look at in the chart. And then there's a fantastic event, but this is a in-person event. It's on the weekend of July 15th and 16th, 2023. And it's a student summer retreat in Colorado with Tony Howard. If you can attend, I think it's going to be amazing. I can't attend because I'm too far. I'm in Europe, but I would love to go. I think it's going to be amazing. You have all of the information in astrologyuniversity.com. I don't have anything important coming up. If you want to contact me, my Instagram is liminalcosmos. My website is liminalcosmos.com. And yeah, great. So, Carol, thank you so very much. You're fantastic. I love the way you express ideas. Thank you so much for being here and sharing all of your insights and your thoughts. Yes.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure, Alejo. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Thanks for tuning in to the Astrology University podcast. I'm the founder, Tony Howard. Head over to astrologyuniversity.com where you can find webinars and courses to help deepen your study of astrology. Study with some of the best astrologers in the field and check out our diploma program for those of you interested in working professionally or in developing the skill to analyze charts for yourself, your friends, and family. Hope to see you in class soon. And until then, take good care.